Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the parrying voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew. How are we?
Not too shabby, my friend. Not too shabby. You?
Very well. Parrying, indeed. Seemed to have been an interesting weekend this weekend. Lots of parrying.
Lots of parrying. Yes, the theme will run through today's podcast. And just because I noticed on a few occasions this weekend, and you've spoken about this quite a bit in the past, the luck of a goalkeeper whereby a goalkeeper parries a shot or a cross and it sometimes ends up in a goal, it sometimes falls to his own player, and sometimes it falls to his or her own player who then mounts an attack and a goal is scored some 30 seconds later. Love to see it.
Which did happen this weekend, yes. And it's one of my, pet peeves. We'll talk about this, no doubt, in the show, where you can do the same action, and sometimes that same action can be credited as a great save when it works out your way thereafter. But similarly, if it ends up in a goal, then people will question it, whether you could have held it, whether you could have done something differently. And similarly, when it then ends up going up the other end and you scoring a goal, of course, that save takes on even more significance. And we've got a few examples of that today.
I did say the luck of a goalkeeper, and that is how you have referred to it in the past. But, I mean, it's not really the luck of a goalkeeper. We don't want to do it downright. There are a couple of occasions, a couple of great saves. Ian Melier made a very good save for Leeds against Southampton. Joe Hart made a very good save for Celtic in the Old Firm this week. That isn't particularly the luck of a goalkeeper. That's skill. That's using a strong left hand to get that ball out of danger.
Very true. I think the luck comes in terms of the outcome. Because if the outcome works in your favour, then, as mentioned, it can be something that the commentators will give you a lot of credit for. And then similarly, if it doesn't quite work out, they don't. And I just think that when I talk about it in that way, the luck of the draw is that you can go out, you can play a fantastic game, and some days certain things will go your way, you'll get certain breaks, and of course those saves are just looked at in a completely different light. And it was interesting this weekend because, look, it happens every weekend, of course. You know, it's quite difficult to hold a football, certainly in the Premier League, the ball being struck as it's being struck. We did see one or two really good examples, actually, of goalkeepers looking to hold this weekend, which was nice too. But of course, more often than not, you are forced to parry and you have to be excellent at parrying a Premier League football. And it's not an easy thing to do, to try and get the angle right to deflect it into the right area. And similarly, if you don't quite get the angle right, as we saw with Hugo Lloris on the free kick, which no doubt we'll talk about very shortly, then it can end up in your goal. And of course, you're going to get criticism on the back of that. So it is. It's one of the hardest arts in football. I'd use the word art because it is one of the hardest skills that you need to master as a goalkeeper. But so often, so little of what happens thereafter has anything to do with you.
Okay, well, we have plenty coming up as per usual on the podcast. All the key action from all top four tiers of English football. We're going to be touching on the Old Firm as well, just a bit of Joe Hart chat towards the end of the podcast. Clean sheet club too. But before we get into everything, Richard, we have some correspondence, and I was going to read this out because it is from a student. I like to read out student correspondence, especially when they ask us for a bit of assistance in a project or a dissertation, whatever it may be that they're doing. And this one has come from across the pond. It's from Hope Heisey. I hope I've pronounced that right. Hope, a Division I female collegiate goalkeeper in the United States at the University of Arizona. Hope says, I love your guys' podcast and look forward to it every week. I'm currently writing an article for my undergraduate degree on goalkeeper mental health and wondered if you guys would shed a little light on how to stay mentally strong through the social media criticism, the comments we see on mainstream media about goalkeepers, and the pressure we feel from our teammates, our coaches, our fans, and ourselves. It's a loaded question, but you guys have given such great insight into the mental psychology of goalkeeping in the past, I figured it didn't hurt to ask. Thanks for being a great outlet for young goalkeepers across the world.
Yeah, that is a great question. And to be honest, there's not a simple answer. Well, I say that the simple answer would be avoid it. You know, avoid social media, avoid fans' forums, etc., etc. Like, whether that's realistic, maybe not. But where possible, I'd suggest to avoid it, because a lot of what you're going to read isn't going to be written by people that are, first and foremost, being constructive or offering you anything that's going to add value to who you are as a goalkeeper. So realistically, is it information that you need to take in? Probably not. So if you can avoid, I'd certainly recommend that. If it's not possible and you are going to see a lot of these comments, then, and this is me being a little bit geeky, I came to the realization that the emotion hits you before you consciously think about something. So you can read it, and before you've had a chance to fully process it, you've already felt the emotion. And that's one of the difficulties about this, because you will feel that sensation, even though logically you might read it and consciously you might read it and say, well, that doesn't make any sense and I don't agree with that. You've already got the feeling, that negative feeling that comes with being criticized. So then the question comes, how do you deal with that? Well, look, when you've got the conscious awareness to know that it's not true, it's then just being aware that whatever emotion that you're feeling in that moment isn't real, and that you do have the ability then to work with that emotion, get rid of that emotion, get yourself back to the state that you were in prior to that, or back to a productive, powerful state that will allow you more chance to move forward and to continue to improve, progress, etc., etc. So there is no simple answer, but a lot of it for me will come back to that, is having processes in place mentally to know that whenever you do see criticism, you hear criticism, you have a way in which you can get yourself back to an empowered state. Because look, ultimately, if you continue to read criticism and you allow it to impact you negatively, of course that's going to impact your motivation. You may have self-doubt that may creep in, which, again, all these things aren't going to help you become a better goalkeeper. And personally, I'll always come back to that. I'll always come back to the process, because I know this sounds so simple, but if you are motivated every single day of your life and you're excited about being a better goalkeeper and you're committed to improving different areas of your game, then you've got the best chance of maximizing who you are as a goalkeeper. The moment you go down the other path and you're disempowered, you're getting criticized, you're having self-doubt, you're losing motivation, then of course you're not going to be able to put the work in order to get yourself to where you want to be.
And that ties into the pressure that Hope asks about too, the pressure that you feel from your teammates, your coaches, your fans, and ultimately yourself.
Absolutely. And something else that I recommend as well when it comes to a lot of that, because look, pressure, what is pressure? It's not a real thing. It's ultimately your thoughts. You know, you can feel pressure or not feel pressure. There's a reason why certain goalkeepers play with a big smile on their face and others look like they've got the weight of the world on their shoulders. It's just how you process your thoughts. So I certainly, when it comes to that, something I do recommend for goalkeepers, a lot of self-talk. I think that, you know, if you're feeling pressure, like, own it. You know, whether it's physically, physiologically, you do something just to move your body and work with those sensations. But then also a lot of self-talk. Like, you'd be amazed at positive self-talk, affirmations, what they can do for your mentality. If you're going into a game, keep telling yourself that you're going to have a great game, that you can't wait for the game, you're excited for the game, that you're going to have your best performance, etc., etc., and feel the positive sensations that come with that. So again, it's all fantastic learning tools with all these things that you do experience. And this is where I think goalkeeping can have such a positive impact on your life as well. Because a lot of the skills you'll learn in order to be a mentally sound goalkeeper, you'll suddenly see just come into your day-to-day life. So certainly when you're starting to feel the pressure, you're starting to feel a little bit anxious, etc., etc., don't just allow it to be. You know, you can work with it and you can change it.
I'm pumped. I'm pumped for the podcast now, mate.
Absolutely. Yeah, me too. This is it. Some affirmations. This is going to be the best pod yet. We're going to go into such detail about goalkeeping. Commentary Corner is going to be like nothing we've ever experienced before. No doubt we'll give each other a bit of stick along the way. This is going to be good. I'm excited.
It's a good affirmation, isn't it? We'll give each other stick. I don't want pressure from you, mate. I don't want to be put down.
I know. This is it. You see, this is how we're wired, I'm afraid, Mr. Beadle. I do apologize.
Thank you very much, Hope, for that email. Lovely stuff. Hopefully that's given you a good enough answer for your undergraduate degree. If you'd like to get in touch with us, just like Hope did, very easy to do so on email hello@goalkeepersunion.net or on our phone number 07503 673 020. On with the show.
Let's do it.
Right, starting at Molineux, where Wolves beat Aston Villa 2-1, and Jose Star yet again was the star of the show. Star the star, 5 saves, excellent saves from Leon Bailey and Matty Cash late on in particular. Overall, pretty good yet again.
Yeah, he really is making a name for himself this season, it's fair to say, and I thought he was excellent again. Really good spread save in particular. Got himself very close to the ball. We talk about this a lot, the distance you can get to the ball, got himself to an optimum distance, effectively did the splits, you know, showed just how flexible he was in order to create a very powerful, very effective shape, made it very difficult for the attacking player to try and get the ball past him. Very, very good save. Top hand save, I thought technically excellent to his left-hand side it was. Got up very well, took up a good position, powerful, good save. Did give away a penalty. We've seen this a few times this season, and we'll see it more and more, and it's such a difficult one for a goalkeeper when you see the ball there and you feel like it's yours. You can't necessarily see what's going on in your peripheral vision, so you just go for the ball, but the moment someone gets there ahead of you, it's always going to be a penalty. And I don't really know what you can do here, because we have seen this.
It's tough, though. Tough, isn't it, that?
Really tough. Well, listen, I don't know. I kind of look at this and you always think, well, what would the coaching point be? You know, if you're the coach, what would you be saying to the goalkeeper here that he could do differently next time? And I just don't know, because ultimately when the ball's there in front of you and you think you can go and gather it, you are going to sprint towards it and try and gather it. Now, if someone gets there ahead of you, it's going to look incredibly clumsy, which it did. But I just don't think there's much you can do. I mean, if anyone's got any thoughts on what you could do differently in this situation, then by all means do let us know. But I just think it's one of those things. We're going to see several penalties like this every year, no doubt, just because there isn't a great deal you can do. Certainly when it comes to your vision, you're not going to be able to see what's coming from each side necessarily, and you've only got eyes for the ball. So from time to time, this will happen.
And we talk about goalkeeping intelligence. That really there is attacking intelligence, isn't it? I think it was Ollie Watkins that he brought down. We saw it in the game at Craven Cottage between Fulham and Huddersfield. It was Marek Rodak, wasn't it? Mm. A foul on Sorba Thomas. Exactly the same thing. That's attacking intelligence, I suppose.
Exactly that. You know that the moment you get there ahead of the goalkeeper, you could smash it 50 yards. It's irrelevant. The moment you get there ahead of the goalkeeper and then you collide into the goalkeeper who's committed for the ball, it's always going to be a penalty. So, yeah, not any criticism from me on that, really. As I say, I think that's just one of those things. Interestingly, probably one of the best saves he made is one that, if you were to look at it technically and talk about goalkeeping in terms of textbook goalkeeping, it probably wasn't, in that there was a cross to the far post. I think it was Matt Cash with the volley, and he's ended up following the ball, couldn't make the cross, but in the end managed to get close enough so that when Matt Cash did hit the volley, he was then close enough to make a spread save, which was quite unusual. We actually spoke about Jose Sarri at a similar moment. Who was it against? It was against Leeds, wasn't it? I think a week or two back, where he was moving around his goal, and it was interesting to watch, because you wouldn't ordinarily see a goalkeeper do this, be so active. Normally they retreat to their line and look to make the save, but he is one that wants to come and get involved, and he showed it again here. It didn't work out against Leeds. They ended up bypassing and scoring a goal, but certainly here it worked out very well, because he's ended up getting himself to within about a yard, and then he makes the spread save at that point. So for me, interesting in that it certainly wasn't textbook goalkeeping, but in the end, really effective goalkeeping, because he makes a great save.
How many caps for Portugal, Jose Sarr?
Ooh, go on. It's not going to be many, is it?
Zero.
That is interesting.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? He was called up for the most recent round of fixtures, but only because one of the other goalkeepers pulled out. So Rui Patricio, the number one, of course. He's actually having a very good season. 13 clean sheets this season, 4 in his last 5. You've got Anthony Lopez of Lyon and Diogo Costa of Porto. He's been called up twice now, and that was a few years ago. So it'll be interesting to see what happens if he continues his form throughout the end of this season and the beginning of next, whether he gets that call up for the World Cup. Because if Jose Sarr can't get in an international squad, considering the way he's been playing, that says a lot about Portugal goalkeepers, doesn't it?
It does indeed. Yeah, I can't help but feel that he's got to be very, very close. It's always interesting, isn't it, when it comes to like international goalkeepers, and I'm saying this without knowing exactly what's going on you know, in the Portuguese squad, but when you have like a set 1-2-3, you often find that going into major tournaments, a lot of the time they'll want to keep it the same. It's almost, well, they've been our goalkeeper throughout qualifying, so therefore we'll stick. And then as soon as a major tournament finishes, you might see a bit of a reshuffle. I remember that was why it was so surprising for me when Joe Hart was dropped out of, it was the Euros, wasn't it? Or was it the last World Cup? I can't think now. But whichever one it was quite surprising. He'd actually played pretty much every game in the qualifying and then didn't make the final squad, which is so unusual. You kind of do have a bit of a two-year cycle. So it wouldn't surprise me if it's one where we do see that he is introduced after the World Cup. And no doubt when he's introduced, if he keeps playing like he's playing, then he'll be knocking on the door for a starting place.
Okay, over to the Amex. Brighton 0, Norwich City 0. Tim Krul, up to his old penalty antics, didn't save from Neil Mopay, was blasted over, but certainly played a part in that. It did look like Neil Mopay didn't really fancy that penalty. And also a very good tip over from Joel Veltman, his countryman. Good to see that when a player just gives a goalkeeper a bit of respect after making a save.
Yeah, well, it was a brilliant save. It's one where the ball's crossed in. He's moved across the line, giving himself maximum reaction time, and the way in which he gets a hand to it. Yeah, unbelievable reactions. You know, we'll talk a lot about goalkeepers as they get older, that certain things that might start to go. And one of the things is your speed of reactions, your kicking power. But no, certainly in terms of reactions here, Tim Krul, massive credit to him. Unbelievable save. And you could just sense on the penalty, as you say, it seemed psychologically more than anything. You know, the camera zoomed in on Neil Mopay and he just didn't look confident at all. And then you've got Tim Krul doing what he's doing on the line. So it just, again, I think a lovely lesson for young goalkeepers that you really can impact a situation. It's not just about what you do physically. It's not just about, you know, the saves you make or the technique you decide to go with on a penalty. There's so much more that you can do in order to try and get into the head of the attacker.
At the other end in that game, Robert Sanchez, not a single save to make. However, over at Stamford Bridge, his Spanish international's teammate, David Raya, had a number of saves to make as Brentford, your old boys, romped to victory against Chelsea. A big stop at 0-0 in the first half from Hakim Ziyech. And then, here we go with the theme, a parry which led to a goal. He pushed away across from Mason Mount, straight up the other end, goal scored by Christian Eriksen.
Well, there you go, indeed. The parrying theme starts. But no, to talk about the save that he made, certainly from distance, interesting that he made it. We talk a lot about top-hand saves and certain techniques that goalkeepers decide to go with. This was effectively the bottom hand. But I think what David Raya has is incredible athleticism, incredible agility. And we kind of saw the power here that it made more sense for him as he's diving to his right to go up with his right hand and effectively then twist in the air when he lands. And this for me made a lot of sense in that it was actually a technique that I used to use, which was an interesting. I'd use it to my left-hand side where when I'd move to my left, I found it so much easier to go up with my left hand as opposed to come over with my right hand and make a top hand save. Yet to my right hand side, I often found it easier to go up with my left hand again and make a top hand save. You could see with David Raya here, he looked a lot more comfortable going up with his right hand to his right hand side and the power he was able to generate in order to get up there. And then once you've made the save, it's then a little bit unnatural to land when you go like that. So you do need to twist in the air in order to land effectively and land safely. But he executed it perfectly. And certainly, look, he's had a massively positive impact, I think it's fair to say, on coming back into the Brentford team. Brentford now looking, you know, as good as secure in the Premier League for next season. So massive well done to him, massive well done to them. And yeah, when you make a save and it goes up the other end and ends up being a goal, then great. And again, this comes back to what we were talking about at the start of the show, that look, did that save then lead to the goal? Well, no, of course it didn't. But when it does, then it does take on that little bit more significance.
I should ask you, really, can you recall a time in your career when this happened, when you made a save and your team went up the other end and scored?
Not really. More when you've made a big save at 0-0, for instance, and then you go on and win the game 1-0, and the significance that save has. I mean, look, there'd be nothing better, and I can't think of one off the top of my head, of making like an absolute worldie and then scoring in the same passage of play. Like, that would be one of those moments, I think, where you go and join in the celebration. You know, that's where you're running the length of the field, 100%. But no, for me, it was more the case of you would know, and I think goalkeepers get this, you would know when you've made a big save at 0-0, there is part of you that thinks, you know, I really hope we get a result today. Because if we get a result, people are going to talk about that save. And that's the bit, that goes back to what we said at the start of the show, the luck of a goalkeeper, the luck of the draw. You can't control that. You can only have so much control of that, in terms of your performance. But a lot of what happens with the lads outfield, whether they play well or not so well, isn't down to you. Yet your save could take on so much more significance if you end up getting a result.
Well, I tell you, Richard, who did make a big save at 0-0, and that was Alisson over at Anfield, where Liverpool beat Watford. Again, your old boys, two goals 8-0. A big chance in the first half for the Hornets. Kutzka cleaned through Allison, doing what he does, racing out, brilliant block. And 34 seconds later, Diogo Jota netted the opener.
It was another sort of classic Allison one-on-one. I know it seems to be a bit of a theme, but you know, certainly for Allison, if you were to give him a super strength, it would have to be this, because I just think his timing, his gamesmanship, the way in which he approaches these situations, I think he's very, very good. And again, I just think he's timed it brilliantly. Like, it's one-on-one. He stays deep. All of a sudden he comes, but he doesn't come rushing out and throwing himself at the feet. He comes out, he holds, gets close enough, makes himself big enough, and then ends up making the save. I just think he's really mastered the art of the one-on-one. And certainly, not just young goalkeepers, I think any goalkeepers out there that want to improve on one-on-ones, I'd say you could do a lot worse than just watching footage of Alisson over the last few years and how he approaches one-on-ones. And again, it is that situation where you go up the other end, you score, and in the end, a massive 3 points for them in the hunt for the title. And it's saves like that, that are the sort of saves that will be referred to as where a goalkeeper can win a team 3 points, you know. And certainly, as you mentioned, it was at a crucial time of the game.
Another parry. This time, it fell to an opposition player and a goal was scored. So this is the other end of the spectrum. At Old Trafford, Manchester United 1, Leicester City 1. And Kasper Schmeichel with a good save from Bruno Fernandes. It did fall to Fred. He did rifle it into the roof of the net. A little bit of punditry from Jamie Redknapp on this one as well. Although, I feel like it was kind of weaned out of him by Kelly Cates, the presenter. It was almost like he didn't really want to talk about it. And then as a result, he just fell into the cliches.
He really did. I mean, I was cringing as I was listening to it, because you could see the look on his face where he didn't look comfortable giving the advice and giving the perspective. And I think there was a part of him that realized, I do not know what I'm talking about right now. And he was trying to sort of fumble his way along and make a couple of points in terms of what Kasper Schmeichel was doing and what he was trying to do. Look, the truth is, there's not a great deal more that Kasper Schmeichel could have done. The ball's at full stretch. You can't hold it, given the nature of the save. There wasn't a great deal of pace on it. There's probably not enough pace in order to deflect it around the post. So you have to just deflect it outsidewards, which is what you're taught to do as a goalkeeper. And sometimes they follow it up, sometimes they don't. And that, again, goes back to what we said before, the luck of the draw. Now, Jamie Redknapp's trying to suggest that perhaps he could have done a little bit better. So then when asked, and this is the point that we make so often on this show, when asked, he didn't have the answer. Because he didn't know why. Yet it was so interesting watching him squirm. I'm so glad that they asked him the question, in fairness, because it was so interesting watching him squirm, trying to explain what a goalkeeper does and what he should have done. And clearly the look on his face suggested he was in a lot of trouble. You know, there was a screen grab that I saw, and he looked like in pain, because he just didn't know where he was going with his point. And I felt sorry for him, but at the same time, I was like, that serves you right. You've made the point. Now you've got to back it up. Now you've got to explain. Now you've got to dissect it and tell us why he could have done better. And he just couldn't.
Yeah, it was quite funny, like you said, to watch. At the other end, a tale of two headers for David De Gea. The goal conceded by Kelechi Iheanacho. Not much more, really, he could have done with that. But what an unbelievable save from the Harvey Barnes header. Absolutely incredible.
Yeah, brilliant. You know, we talk a lot about classic De Gea, and that was this, really, which I thought the timing of the set was excellent. If you watch it in super slow-mo, you see that as it's headed, it's perfect. He's just landing, which gives him the ability to then explode, and the explosive power that he gets to his right, because that is going right in the corner. You know, it's a powerful header that's going right in the top corner, and he just times the whole thing perfectly. And as he explodes to his right to then get fingertips, it is right on the limit, you know. And I know we say this a lot on this show, but there's not a lot of goalkeepers in the world that can make that save. In fact, he's probably one of a handful, and it really is a top draw save.
It was Wesley Fofana, wasn't it? Not Harvey Barnes that had that header. Wesley Fofana, brilliant save from David De Gea, and a brilliant save from Ian Melier over at Elland Road, where Leeds United drew with Southampton 1-1, and a couple of parries yet again. A parry from Fraser Forster from the Rafinha cross that ended up in a goal for Jack Harrison, and that aforementioned parry from Ian Melier, a Shea Adams shot, which didn't end up in a goal for the Saints.
Yeah, frustrating one, I think, for Fraser Forster, because it's one that you can see that he's caught in two minds. He's wanting to try and go with two hands and hold it, kind of realizes that he can't. He doesn't get there with maybe as much pace as he'd want to, and in the end isn't able to do all that much. It's a real tricky one for keepers, I find, this, when the ball's down on the byline and they effectively cut it back, but like chip it back, but you know, or you feel in that moment that you can't get two hands to it. Are you better off just leaving it and turning onto your line and then looking to make the save? Or like Fraser Forster did, kind of getting one hand to it, parrying it out into play, and then hoping that something works in your favour on the second ball. And it's, again, I don't think I've necessarily got a right or wrong answer for this. I think my technique would always to have been, if I didn't think I could hold it, it would be just to turn on my line and then wait for the ball to be either headed or cleared, and then look to make the save from the second phase. Whereas I do think a lot of goalkeepers do like the idea of trying to get a parry back out into play and then retreating to their line to then make the save. So again, I don't think there's a right or wrong answer here. In the end, this one didn't work out for Fraser Forster. They did score the follow-up. And to be honest, it's one where he'll probably be a little bit frustrated just because it didn't look brilliant. And I think a lot of that might be, again, where the ball ends up. But maybe he wasn't quite able to get the explosive power up to his right-hand side to possibly get two hands to it. But that being said, as mentioned, it is a real tricky one that goalkeepers often find themselves in that situation without the answer. And then Melier, a very different save, but a very, very good save. And this time, as you said, he did get the luck of one of his lads following up. Sharp save, really sharp save to his left-hand side. Someone follows it up, and of course, that then goes down as a top save.
Just quickly, Turf Moor, Burnley 0, Manchester City 2. We'll flag the Edison save, his only save of the game, I think, but we're flagging it because he caught it rather than parrying a shot from Jay Rodriguez. Nice to see, occasionally. I think this is one for the purists, isn't it? Those pundits who always go, you never see a goalkeeper catch the ball anymore.
Yeah, I'd agree with this. It was really well held as well, because the shot was struck with quite a bit of power. Just very uncomplicated. You know, it's... a lot of people obviously focus a lot on Edison's distribution and maybe doesn't get enough credit for just how good he is when it comes to his shot-stopping ability in particular. And he's got a certain way of keeping goal, I think that's fair to say. And one-on-one situations, you know, he's got certain techniques that he chooses to adopt. But I see quite a lot of this from Edison, that certainly shots from distance, he does look to hold what he can, which I do like to see. And again, it's... another big clean sheet for him, and no doubt we'll be talking about him in the clean sheet club later.
Okay, London Stadium, West Ham United 2, Everton 1, and sadly, it's one of these.
Commentary corner.
So, reluctantly, we shall mention this. Quite the motley crew in the Sky Sports studio. Graeme Souness, David Ginola, and Jermaine Defoe, who we should, by the way, call out for... sticking with the goalkeepers union here, he wasn't to be outdone by his elder statesmen with their absurdities, and he called them out. He made the point of saying, no, absolutely no fault of the goalkeeper whatsoever here. Now, this was regarding the opener, the free kick from Aaron Cresswell. And again, we want to avoid repetition here. We want to avoid saying the same old thing over and over again. But sometimes you just cannot ignore it when the punditry is this ridiculous. So David Ginola, first up on that free kick, scored by Cresswell. Top bins, Jordan Pickford, absolutely no chance. Ginola, however, I'm just concerned about the keeper, he said. The keeper doesn't move at all. He's stuck. Look at the feet. He doesn't move and he's too late. It's 90. It's 90. Then Graeme Souness jumps in and says, 90 degrees. It's 90 degrees. No. It's 90%. Is what Ginola was actually getting at. It's a 90% chance the kicker will kick it in that corner. You know it as a goalkeeper. You don't stand. You move. It's weird. And then there was a weird kind of 5-second silence before David Jones, the presenter, came in and said, tough on Pickford. At which point Defoe said, no, not saving that. To execute that right in the top corner, nah, not saving that whatsoever. And then Graeme Souness jumped back in and said, I think David's point of where he doesn't move is because he can't see it. He knows when he's kicked it, he can't see it, so he's guessing it's going there, and he's just diving into midair and gets nowhere near it.
I mean, where do I start? And actually, we haven't spoke before this on this point, and I made exactly the same point, that I thought Jermaine Defoe was excellent here, because I think a lot of pundits could have crumbled. In fact, we see it all the time. How many times have we spoke about it where one pundit will make an absurd point and then all of a sudden the others feel the peer pressure and all agree, even though like it's so clear to anyone with any football intelligence, goalkeeping intelligence, that they're wrong, but it's just easier to toe the line and say, oh yeah, I agree. Credit to Defoe, because he stood strong and said a couple of times, like, are you crazy? The funny thing was, and again, I kind of felt bad for Ginola because he was made to look an idiot later on in the day when, of course, they show the Hugo Lloris one. So, all right, let's talk about this, David. So, what is it? 90% they're going to go over the wall. So he should read it. Yet later in the day, Hugo Lloris, they go his side and it goes in. And the difference in commentary when all of a sudden they were talking about his mate, Hugo Lloris, to when they're talking about Jordan Pickford was astounding. Like, and as you say, how can you possibly look at this and have any question mark towards Jordan Pickford? Like, honestly, like the most unbelievable free kick right in the top corner. It's just incredible. And the fact that Graham Souness started to jump on it as well, it's like, are you kidding me? Let's break it down. Let's break it down logically. So effectively what David Ginola is saying is that he should have cheated. He should have cheated and started guessing before the ball was kicked, because 90% go that way. Yet when we talk about the ball going in the other corner, as goalkeepers, we know that if you're beaten on your side on a free kick, then yeah, more often than not, you'll have to hold your hands up. We say, put it over the wall, put it in that postage stamp, and we will give you credit. That's exactly what Aaron Cresswell did. And yet somehow they're trying to find a way to potentially say that Jordan Pickford could do more, which again, my worry about this is it's going back to the narrative that we speak about so often that is, for me, becoming a little bit too obvious, where there are certain people that perhaps, for whatever reason, maybe aren't big fans of Jordan Pickford, so we'll try and find ways in which they can associate certain things to him. But please, this was not one of those moments you can associate anything to Jordan Pickford.
You run a bit of a roulette, I think, when you had David Ginola on the panel as well, because he is quite a character, quite eccentric, quite unpredictable as well. I've interviewed him a couple of times and you never knew what you were going to get. I remember sitting with him in the BT Sports studio, actually, and he was slapping my thigh, just kept slapping my thigh when he made a point, and potty mouth too. There were a couple of moments, actually, and it looked like he was referring to someone else in the studio. I imagine it was probably another broadcast from another provider, and he shouted over to them a couple of times because they obviously had an ex-player in the studio. You could see David Jones, because classically Sky don't acknowledge anything else other than themselves. David Jones going, I need to ignore this, but he's talking to that bloke over there live on TV. We need to just kind of brush this under the carpet. But yeah, absolutely ridiculous. And also, we've spoken about this many times too, the disparity in the comparison between that and then the error. And we don't want to highlight errors from outfield players. That's not what we're trying to do. But the error from Alex Iwobi that led to the winner from Jarrod Bowen from West Ham, the difference in the punditry, he's just taking his eye off the ball. Or that's an easy one. And Graham Souness, to his credit, did say that's an easy one for him to control there, but he's not managed to control it. And then just moved on to the next point. Didn't hold him accountable at all.
Yeah. I was thinking that as I was watching it, because it was, you actually consider that pass, let's break that down. It was a very slow, simple pass on the ground that has rolled under his foot. You know, imagine that a goalkeeper did that and they tapped it in, which is effectively what's ended up happening. It's ended up in a goal. And you're right, the commentary was so gentle. And yet they've actually given Jordan Pickford more stick for the free kick that goes in over the wall in a postage stamp than the guy who has the ball roll under his foot, a professional footballer playing in the Premier League, who has the ball roll under his foot and the opposition score. Yet Jordan Pickford has got more stick for a ball that's been whipped over the wall into the top corner. It's not right. Like, I know we laugh about it on here, but it really isn't right. We're going to keep saying the same thing at some point. I can't wait for someone to be on that panel and just shut them up, because it's not right. It really isn't.
I do just want to mention some comments as well made by David Moyes after the game, because I think this really speaks volumes, because everybody's talking at the moment about Aaron Ramsdale and how he's pushing Jordan Pickford for that number one spot in the England side, which he absolutely is. But David Moyes made the point where he said, what happens is we are waiting on Jordan making a mistake. And I think that's really true. I think people are just waiting for Jordan Pickford, or trying to pick out anything that they can to say, oh, that's an error from Jordan Pickford. We told you he's not good enough. He shouldn't be in the England side. And David Moyes said, the truth is, I don't think he's let England down in games that mattered. He's a really good distributor of the ball. We know that. He is good for modern football. He can kick it a mile and he can pass it. I actually think England are really lucky in terms of his distribution as well. We saw that in the game where a first-time pass to Richarlison that should have been scored, really. Fantastic distribution from Pickford.
Yeah, it really was. And I think that's, again, we talk a lot about agendas. And going back to that, that's probably where this bugs me the most, is that this shouldn't have been a talking point. And the fact that it was, and the fact that we're talking about it now on here, what happens now if Jordan Pickford does make a genuine error in the next game? It's almost then seen as, oh, well, he could have done better on the free kick against West Ham, and then he's done this, and then he's done this. And suddenly it like builds momentum, but it's not real. It's, yeah, effectively, and you could do that with any goal conceded. We could look at every single goal that's ever been conceded and question or suggest that the goalkeeper might have done something differently. But that's just not fair. Like, we're not then doing it based on reality. And I think the reality is that actually in this game, Jordan Pickford had a solid game. Actually made a very good save on the winning goal. Again, yeah, going back to the parrying theme, there's not a great deal you can do on that. Makes a great save and it breaks, unfortunately for him, to a player who puts it in. So, yeah, it's one where, look, people building a narrative around certain players is always going to be a thing. Look, it's a game of emotion. It's a game of opinions. And because of that, there is a certain tide, I feel, that is against Jordan Pickford at the moment. Rightly or wrongly, it just is what it is. And hopefully when we give this podcast, we can give more of a level-headed opinion, because it really did bug me watching this, in that actually I thought this was a solid 7 out of 10, 8 out of 10 performance from Jordan Pickford, and yet he was once again a major talking point for very little reason.
Final game in the Premier League, Tottenham 5, Newcastle 1. You've mentioned it a bit there. The opener from Newcastle, a Fabian Schär free kick and Hugo Lloris parrying but not able to keep it out. Now, Graeme Souness said, is he extending himself even? What's the height of it? It's a really good saving height. There you go. He's falling onto it. Is he really diving onto it? This kind of reminds me of what you said a couple of weeks ago with the Woody from Toy Story. Is he really diving onto it? No, he's just collapsing into a heap. And David Ginola, the funny bit, I thought, was when you said he was trying to avoid criticising him. And he just said, on that particular free kick, he's guilty of something. You are guilty, Hugo Lloris. We are holding you up in goalkeeper court. You're guilty of something in that goal that you conceded.
Where do I start with this one? In fact, I'll start with Graeme Souness, because I think the thing he doesn't realise, and it's not just him, it's a lot of the outfield commentators, when they talk about a goalkeeping action, it is so basic. I'll try and give the equivalent of someone talking about an outfield player. You know, when they're talking in such technical terms and you hear Gary Neville and these guys and they can go into real detail because they get it and they'll talk in such technical terms, it's then all of a sudden you go back to Billy Basics when you're talking about a goalkeeper. You know, it'd be like I was talking about the outfield players and, oh, look, doesn't he kick it really far? And he's, you know, and he manages to get curl on it because he kicks it with the inside of his foot. You know, it's like, really, we're listening to this and you can see and imagine every goalkeeper up and down the land just cringing. It's like you're talking to a 12-year-old who's just started playing in goal. Like, come on, you've got to be able to give a little bit better than this. And for David Ginola, the point was, and it was, I guess it was probably karma, wasn't it, after him going in on Jordan Pickford, to then have, who is someone who is obviously a friend, you know, someone he rates very highly, and rightly so, by the way, because he is an exceptional goalkeeper. You could see he just didn't want to criticise him, but he knew he had to an extent. So he was kind of avoiding it. And as you say, yeah, I think Hugo Lloris is guilty of something. Look, this wasn't a good goal. And let's be honest about it. Hugo Lloris, you could see from his reaction straight after. He held his hands up. He was furious with himself. The ball was his side. We go back to free kicks. He's lined his wall up well. He's taken up a good position. He's done everything right. And the thing that he didn't do right, he didn't get his parry correct. The parry should have been round the post. And that was what he looked to do. And he just didn't quite time it right. It's as simple as that. It is a mistake. And he very much held his hands up in that moment. And that's what it is if you're to break it down. But once again, it wasn't necessarily broken down. It was just that generic, he has to do better. Graeme Souness tried to break it down and failed miserably.
It is the EFL overview, starting in the Championship, where Dan Iverson was unlucky with a double save as Preston were defeated by Derby. And that's because even though both Curtis Davies and Luke Plange were denied, Iverson had no chance with that second rebound from Ravel Morrison. Mark Travers, a big save at a big moment for Bournemouth in their win over Bristol City. It was 2-1 at the time and they won 3-2. He's played in all but one league game this season, fought off that fight from Freddie Woodman too. And Bree Samba back in for Nottingham Forest. A decent game. They hammered Blackpool. But interesting, because Ethan Horvath had been away on international duty due to the short turnaround and jet lag. Steve Cooper decided that he'd bring Samba back in. He's also admitted he now has quite the conundrum as to who he picks next time out.
Yeah, no, he does have a bit of a conundrum, because certainly from what I saw, Ethan Horvath came in and had some solid games. So he's certainly got a bit of a conundrum there. We've seen this with a few teams actually recently and a few goalkeepers, where it's so interesting, that transition, and it does feel like it's happening more and more, and for smaller and smaller reasons, you know. And I know this might just be sort of thinking back and looking back through sort of rose-tinted glasses to an extent, or looking back at the history in a slightly different way, in that you think the amount of goalkeepers that were just number ones and that was it, you know, that were never necessarily challenged, it didn't seem, your David Seamans, your Peter Schmeichels, etc., etc., etc. Whereas now it does feel, certainly in the Championship, the amount of changes in the goalkeeping position seems to have been a lot this season. But yeah, certainly big decision on that one. You mentioned a couple of the other saves. Big well done to Mark Travers. We probably haven't spoke about him all that much on this podcast, but bearing in mind that he broke through that game against Tottenham in the Premier League a couple of seasons back, and he's had to wait a period of time for his real chance, and certainly this season he's taken it in a big way, and they're looking very good for the last few games of the season, you would think, to gain promotion. And that could of course mean that he gets his chance in the Premier League. And Dan Iverson, as you mentioned, a couple of great saves, and I suppose going back to the theme of the show, sometimes the parries work for you and sometimes there's just very little you can do when the third one is fired in the corner.
Just to quickly go back to Horvath before we move into League One, that is quite the conundrum for the modern goalkeeper, isn't it? These days, that is classic for modern goalkeeping, in the sense that he's come over from Bruges, had a difficult start to life at Nottingham Forest, he's waited patiently for his chance, he's got that chance because Bree Samba has been sent off, he's out for three games, Horvath comes in, does very well, wins his place back in the US international side, as a result goes away on international duty, but then comes back and not loses his place. We don't know what's going to happen in the next game. But if Samba then stays in, that's such a difficult one. Because if you're Horvath, you're thinking, well, I want to play first team football at my club. But the reason I'm playing first team football at my club is so I can be picked for my international team, because I want to play at major tournaments. He now looks like he's done that. But as a result of that, it's now weirdly backfired on him.
Yeah, it's just not fair. It's the truth. It's just not fair. And I had another similar example recently of a goalkeeper that doing brilliantly well and then was not feeling too good for one game. Had been up all night, sick, etc. And decided to be honest and tell the manager he wasn't feeling great. So they play the other goalie, and then the other goalkeeper then keeps their spot. And it's, again, it's like you do the right thing and yet don't get the right. And this is why you often find with a lot of goalkeepers, and again, interesting to hear you know your guys' take on this, where some just will not give up the shirt for any reason. You know, I remember when I was at Blackburn and Brad Friedel was the goalkeeper there, and I was only there for one season, but he played in every game, even the cup games. He would not allow essentially anybody to play. He just wanted to play every single game. I remember that Peter Enkelman was there for 4 years as his backup and played one game in 4 years, one cup game in 4 years. So it's just, yeah, you know, look, again, there's no right or wrong, but yeah, I think a lot realize that it doesn't take a lot. If you come out of that team for whatever reason, sending off, injury, loss of form, illness, whatever it might be, if the other goalkeeper has one of those games, then of course it is going to be interesting for the manager. And especially if they win, because you get that old cliche as well that, you know, certain managers don't want to change a winning team. And that might happen here. Forest have had a very good victory and he might just want to keep that exact team. And then what happens if they win the next one and then the next one? Then suddenly Ethan Horvath is now a number two again through no fault of his own. It's a bizarre situation, but certainly it's not an isolated one.
into League One and the best goalkeeper in the league, as stated by Oxford United boss Carl Robinson, is Michael Cooper, also lauded by his own boss Stephen Schumacher in Plymouth's 1-0 defeat of the Ewes. An incredible stop from Gavin White, one-on-one with his feet, and then tipped a Billy Bowden volley round the post. That's every minute of all 41 League One fixtures he's played this season, Michael Cooper. 16 clean sheets as well, 7 in his last 8 games. He is in quite the form, as is Jamie Cumming of MK Dons, having a great second half to the season. And we'll mention the opener scored by MK Dons against Shrewsbury. It was Moisa who finished it off, but it started with Jamie Cumming. A simple pass out, another couple of passes, and then a goal. He made a good save from Daniel Udo in that first half as well.
Yeah, very, very good. And it was such a beautiful goal, that. Such a simple goal, in that it was goalkeeper to defensive midfielder, up to attacking midfielder, then into the striker. And it just made football look so simple, but it had to be executed perfectly. And certainly he's at the start of a lot of what they do, and certainly the way that MK look to play, he is a big part of what they do. So a big well done to him. And Michael Cooper, as you mentioned, certainly getting a lot of plaudits this weekend. It has been an excellent season that he's had. This game in particular, a couple of the saves you mentioned, brilliant save with his feet. Can often sound like, I don't know, you make a save with your feet, but this was one where he's had to really move the body in a really athletic way in order to get his foot to the right hand side and get effectively his toes to it to get it round the post, and then an excellent reaction save at his near post. But what I actually quite liked about this save was the fact he's had to move across the entire goal, because it's across from the other side, where he's then moved right across the goal line, gets to the other post very quickly, and then the speed of reaction to make the save at the near post I thought was excellent.
And finishing in League 2, a case of quadruple J here, Jay Lynch with a double of double saves for Rochdale and their goalless draw with Swindon. He's played in the last 12, back and forth with Joel Coleman this season. That was the same last season with Gavin Batzunu. And Joe Day back in for Newport. They lost at home to Exeter. Nick Townsend, of course, was the goalkeeper prior to Joe Day. He won his place 15 games ago. They won 8, they drew 4, they lost 3. Out with a hamstring strain a few weeks ago, Joe Day comes back in, similar to Samba Horvath. Although, loss, drew, loss since Day has come back in, so maybe Townsend will win his place back. Someone who has won their place back at Tranmere is Joe Murphy. A parry and a punch and a goal. Elliot Nevitt put clear to put Tranmere into a lead they couldn't hold on to against Carlisle. And Shamal George with, I think, a save of the weekend contender, keeping out Harrogate's George Thompson in a win for Colchester, which guarantees them safety for another campaign.
Yeah, absolutely. No, certainly plenty of interesting goalkeeping action in League 2. A big mention to Murphy. And again, I'm sure I've mentioned this a couple of times, but the fact that he's still going at the age that he is and still looks as sharp, it really was a top reaction save. And he certainly looks like he's got plenty of time left in him on this evidence. And then, yeah, I was going to mention the Shamal George save, because you're right, for me that was up there. You know, we talk about the David De Gea save earlier. Now, whether this quite of that level, maybe not, but no, the explosivity, the technique he uses to use his top hand to get the flick over the bar, I thought it was an excellent save. Clean Sheet Club. Well, we're getting closer to the end of the season. We'll soon be announcing our champion of yes, that's right, time for Clean Sheet Club. Not long to go now. We start in the Premier League and we have Alisson, sound the siren. Five alive. Robert Sanchez first following 6 defeats on the bounce. Tim Krul on the board for 2022. Edison, standard. Vicente Guaita, threesy peasy. Andrew Fisher, twos up. Ryan Alsop, all tops. Joe Lumley, treble bebble. Marek Rodak, he's got to provide for the Diveride. Is that right? Jack Bonham, good on him. Dimitar Mitov, 2 in a row. Jamie Cumming, ditto. Trevor Carson, clean and win, account open. Michael Cooper, hanging with my man, he's oh so cool. Jamie Patterson, 5-6 in 7 unbeaten. David Stockdale, one more for the siren. Luke McGee, ever present. Tom King, back with a blank after Frank Fielding. Nathan Bishop, not missed a minute. Cam Dawson, shut that door, son. Jay Lynch, second of the week, sixth of the season. Jojo Wallacott, rocking with the Robins. Daniel Rogers, two clean sheets and wins following six defeats. And finally, Lawrence Vigouroux, whisk him right up.
Very good, mate. Very good. What's Marek Rodak got to provide for, mate? What is it?
How is it spelled? Diveride.
What's Diveride, mate? What does that even mean?
I've got no idea. What was it that was meant to be?
Diveride. Brilliant. I think I'm just happy for it to be Diveride, mate. It's a play. It's a play on words, isn't it? He's got to provide for the life ride, but we've changed it to dive ride.
Oh, but you've had it as one word. If that was two words, I would have said dive ride. But yeah, you wrote it as one word.
Well, life ride is one word, isn't it? In terms of that song. MC Creed, mate. Wow. Great track. Great track. For UK garage listeners.
I feel like I've been thrown under a bus there. I feel like that is a poor parry. That's what that is.
Good stuff. Onto the table, which is getting oh so gritty.
I could imagine.
Top of the pile. Still, Liam Roberts on 18 in 40 games. But hot on his heels are that Brazilian pair, Alisson and Ederson, 17 apiece. Alisson in 28, Ederson in 29. They don't concede goals anymore, basically, Alisson and Ederson. They don't concede goals. Just is what it is. You've got to accept it. And then just below them with 16, there's quite the pack. Lee Nichols and Luke McGee in 38. David Stockdale in amongst it now in 40. And Michael Cooper, as we mentioned earlier, 16 in 41. Just a few games to go in League One, League Two, and the Championship. A few more in the Premier League. It's going to go right to the wire, I think.
I think you could be right. Are we going to do like a trophy or something for the winner?
Well, Vaslav Hladký still waiting for his from last season. So, yes, we should do a trophy. And we'll make a trophy. Let's do a trophy. We'll have to do a trophy and present it to the winner.
I think so. Because if it is, I mean, look, let's be honest. It might be a little bit more difficult if it's Ederson or Alisson. But I mean, if it were to be a Liam Roberts, I'd feel quite confident that we could deliver that to Liam Roberts. But yeah, I think we should make a trophy. And look, who knows? Even if it is Ederson, Alisson, we can just put it in the post and fingers crossed. Maybe it'll get to them.
We're just going to finish on the Old Firm and Joe Hart. I know that we don't cover Scottish football enough. I do try and squeeze it in as much as I can, but the Old Firm is a game that many people love to watch. I love to watch too. Sometimes can be unsavoury, as we saw at the weekend. You don't want to be diving around your six-yard box when there's glass shards present on the pitch. But Joe Hart, another good performance from him. And a lot said about Joe Hart this week. He spoke recently on a podcast called The Stiffs, I believe, about his departure from Tottenham and quite an awkward conversation he had with Nuno Espirito Santo at the time. He's gone to Celtic. He's done incredibly well. More clean sheets than anyone else in the Scottish Premiership. He's only three of the number that Craig Gordon managed in that 2016-17 unbeaten campaign under Brendan Rodgers. And he needs just two more clean sheets to match and three more to beat his best total as a professional footballer, considering that's someone who's bagged, what, four Golden Gloves over the years. Quite the impressive season from him. And also the fact that he's been consistent for Celtic too. If you look at last season, it was split, wasn't it, between Scott Bain, Vasilis Barkas and Connor Hazard. He is the outright number one for Celtic this season and seemingly loving life as a goalkeeper yet again.
Yeah, I think you've made many points there. And the big thing for me is that I suppose you could see the last few seasons, although maybe things haven't quite gone as he would have wanted them to in terms of playing time, I suppose, first and foremost, and not really able to impact teams like he had done previously, this did feel like a good fit. You know, it really did. Obviously, top team, for him to go and be that main man again, probably similarities to when he was at City before, and actually see the difference he has made going into that Celtic team, not just physically and in terms of what he brings as a goalkeeper, but certainly what he brings as a character as well. And there was the save that we've mentioned briefly down to his left-hand side against Rangers, which I thought was exceptional, and a lot of things that I read in terms of what was said by Espirito Santo in terms of him as a goalkeeper. Well, look, in that moment, you could see that certainly none of the sharpness has gone. He looks as physically fit as he's ever looked. The speed at which he got himself down to his left-hand side to make that save, he looks incredibly powerful still. And he's always had that presence. You know, he's got a lovely shape, lovely frame. So there's still so much more to come. And no doubt, if he keeps up this level of performance, he will be their number one for many, many years to come. And you do wonder if he keeps doing what he's doing. And I know this is always the sort of question that will follow a Joe Hart or someone of his caliber. If he keeps doing this, is he that far off an England call-up again? Or realistically, has that time passed? You know, you can't ignore him. If they go on to win the league and he does keep a record number of clean sheets and his performance level does stay at the level that it's at now or even increases, then you'd like to think that the door won't be shut on him.
Wow, do you think so? You think that's actually a possibility?
I mean, I'd like to think it is. Whether it is or not, I don't know, because, yeah, look, it's kind of, some would argue that time's passed and there are now other goalkeepers that are seemingly ahead of him and they want to bring more goalkeepers or younger goalkeepers into the fold. And, you know, Gareth Southgate's got a certain type of goalkeeper, it seems, that he tends to look for. Although that being said, you know, Fraser Forster getting a call up into the previous squad, you know, there is an argument to say that Joe Hart, in terms of how Joe Hart plays and certain strengths that Gareth Southgate appreciates, you could argue that Joe and Fraser Forster, it's not like Fraser Forster's head and shoulders above Joe in those areas, without being harsh on Fraser Forster. So, you know, I think that I like the idea that it is still open to him, because if it isn't, it's just a bit of a shame, really. Like, he's gone there, fresh start, reinvented himself, looks reinvigorated, looks motivated, playing incredibly well. If it's then to be that he will never get called up again, I just think that's a shame.
Good point, Richard, and many good points made over the course of the past hour or so on this fine podcast. I would like to thank you.
Thank you, Matthew.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers
away. Oh, wow.